It's Tuesday, July 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Republicans gather to choose their party's U.S. presidential nominee. The mood in Turkey remains tense amid outward joy in the streets.
It's almost impossible for any individual or family to protect themselves from it.
Republicans seek to protect the public from an age-old issue. Also ahead, U.S. financial markets remain strong and female hip-hop honors, all on today's International Edition. By the end of this week, the Republican Party will have officially nominated Donald Trump as its presidential candidate for the general election race that culminates with U.S. voters making their choices on November 8th. VOA's Doug Bernard joins us from the Convention Hall in Cleveland, Ohio, where on this opening day, security and immigration are scheduled topics. But, Doug, I understand there's much more going on. As we try to establish contact with Doug Bernard, we do want to say that the Republican National Convention erupted in a bit of chaos just hours after it began. Opponents of presumptive nominee Donald Trump loudly protesting being denied a floor vote on the convention rules. Call the roll, as the opponents shouted. Practically drowning them out were chants of USA, USA by Trump supporters and party loyalists, something they did not expect to happen at the usually scripted convention. The convention's presiding officer, who was Arkansas Congressman Steve Womack, abruptly put the rules to a vote and then declared that the effort had fallen short. The discord inside the convention site mimicked the chaos that was outside on the streets, where several hundred Trump supporters and opponents held rallies about a kilometer apart as the four-day Republican National Convention opened in the northern city of Cleveland, Ohio. There was some heavy police presence on the streets as well, with officers from other states joining their colleagues in Cleveland. A deadly truck attack in France and the ambush killings of five police officers earlier this month in Dallas and three more in Baton Rouge, Louisiana over the past weekend have heightened fears of bloodshed in Cleveland. Security was to be the focus of the first day of the convention, along with immigration. Speakers include former governor of border state Texas, Rick Perry, the mother of an American killed in Benghazi, Libya, several immigration reform advocates, and former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. We are now joined on the line from Cleveland by Doug Bernard. Hello, Doug.
I think Mr. Trump maybe was trying to cut me off there. I'm not quite sure. So your rundown there was really very accurate. This is a surprising convention inside and out. Inside, the group that calls themselves the Never Trumpers staged something of a rump coup a little bit, or they tried to today. It was bound to go nowhere. It did. They're vowing to continue this up all the way through Wednesday when Mr. Trump is officially put into nomination. All of this isn't to really affect change. It is to embarrass Mr. Trump and kind of take away the luster of his party. Now, you also briefly mentioned the high police presence. There are some 5,000 security personnel, some 3,000 federal personnel here on scene. And while in some areas it does feel like, and this is no hyperbole, being in a military encampment, there still are many thousands of protesters clogging the streets. So both inside the convention hall and outside, you're seeing sort of surprise and turmoil like we just haven't seen at a convention literally for decades.
Well, that is quite a bit of surprise in one sense, although we had heard before the convention that some of the delegates were hoping to vote their conscience, if you will, and even though they were pledged to Mr. Trump during the primary campaign season, a lot of them wanted to just break away and vote on their own because they were not happy with him.
Exactly. That was this was a subject of a Rules Committee debate last week. It was finally resolved on Saturday. That's also part of what this vote, the roll call vote on the rules of the convention was about. Again, I think everybody, the non-Trumpers, never-Trumpers, have acknowledged that they're never really, they aren't going to stop Mr. Trump at this point. But they are trying to do everything they can to really kind of take a piece of flesh out of his hide.
Well, we look forward to more reports out of Cleveland. Doug Bernard, thank you so much for joining us from the convention hall. And coming up tonight, a speech by Mr. Trump's wife should be interesting. Thanks so much, Doug.
My pleasure.
We'll stay with International Edition as we will have more on pornography on the agenda at the Republican National Convention. But first, we stay with the topic. Our next segment, International Edition's social media reporter, G. Abby Lee, is here with the buzz online for day number one. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim. Like you and Doug mentioned, today's the first day of the convention, and the main chatter on social media seems to be that the anti-Trump forces are being denied the rights to rules vote. So even though it's in the beginning stage of the four-day process, it's quite clear the party is not united. Also, the breaking news about Trump's motorcade getting into an accident has been trending on social media about half an hour ago, but it's been reported that Trump himself is not hurt.
Well, I'm sure many of our listeners would want to know who will be speaking at the convention. Tell us about that.
Sure. For tonight, that's Monday here in America, Trump and his wife Melania Trump will speak. And also in the lineup are, like you mentioned, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former Texas Governor Rick Perry.
Well, a bit of a revolt on the floor, a traffic accident outside. What is Mr. Trump himself saying?
Well, nothing controversial so far. He tweeted this: looking forward to being at the convention tonight to watch all of the beautiful, wonderful speakers, including my wife, Melania. Place looks beautiful. His choice for running mate, Mike Pence, didn't tweet about the convention. Tonight's theme is Make America Safe Again, which is already trending on Twitter as a hashtag.
Well, thank you so much, G, for that wrap-up of social media. You can tweet your comments and questions to us at VOA underscore IE. G and myself are on Twitter at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among some of the top stories that are trending in Asia at this hour, China holds naval exercises in South China Sea. The Taliban stages fresh attacks in northern Afghanistan. Police shot dead in Kazakhstan. Afghan man says in-laws killed his daughter in revenge. U.S. senators urge South Korea to take Donald Trump with a grain of salt. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The United States is urging Turkey to exercise restraint and act within the rule of law as it investigates last week's failed coup amid conflicting reports about whether a former Air Force commander confessed to being a ringleader of the attempted takeover. State media reports more than 8,700 officers have been suspended, 6,000 members of the judiciary and military have been detained following the attempted coup on Friday, which is sparking concern from world leaders who warn against actions that would damage constitutional order. There is much concern privately among residents in Turkey, although it's not as evident outside on the streets. Freelance journalist Jyoti Harry joins us from the Asia side of the Bosphorus in Istanbul.
Thousands of people in cars with flags, honking, cheering, and essentially celebrating. It's something that you'd see after, in the winning city of the Super Bowl, rather than worry or there were close to 300 people killed during this coup, but right now people are celebrating the winning of democracy, as they say.
Are these people more celebrating the concept of democracy as opposed to perhaps staunch Erdogan supporters?
I would say these are staunch Erdogan supporters. Obviously, there are people that are worried, concerned that a coup took place, but those are not the people that are out in the streets. I don't think that they would dare to be out in the streets because there have been incidences across Turkey where people have been attacked, and the government has declared July 15th the People's Democracy Day. It's something that they plan to celebrate every year. So you've got the Erdogan supporters, but you've also got nationalists, and you've also got people that are sort of just on the bandwagon, I guess.
And how about security on the streets? Are you seeing a large police presence out there? And what about the military?
There's definitely a lot of police presence, not so much in the smaller towns, not that there isn't, but if you go into the central squares, you're going to see the water bomber trucks. There was tanks out earlier today in central Istanbul, also in Ankara. I do want to warn and say, I mean, although there is this jubilant mood on the streets and the squares, there are still large numbers of people that are very, very scared, that are considering leaving the country, those that can. I don't want to sound as though, it's a complete celebration across the country. Clearly, there are people that are very, very scared that the country is moving into destabilization, Islamization. So, let me just clarify that as well.
Jody, well, thank you so much for letting us know what's happening on the ground as you move about.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Jody Ayer reporting from Istanbul. U.S. financial markets are still up despite all that's going on in the world, but they're not moving so much, seem to be unaffected by the news events, as we check in with VOA financial correspondent Jill Malandrino from New York.
Yeah, we kicked off a little bit flat this week following a very strong week of returns that the S&P reached record highs 5 consecutive trading days. So we had essentially a perfect week in trading. Today, energy's lagging as crude continues to slide. European shares gained ground this morning. Of course, Turkish stocks fell after the attempted coup. But I think right now the market's focusing on the Republican National Convention, which opened today in Cleveland, Ohio. The confirmation of Donald Trump as the party's presidential nominee is expected to take place on July 21st. And that's something that we're going to be focusing on in the financial community, because we'll start to look at stocks that will be winners and losers depending on who we think is going to get into the White House as we get closer to the election. But what's good for this week is macro data is finally going to take a back seat. As earnings are now in full swing, we have 88 companies of the S&P 500 delivering results this week, with major financials reporting today and tomorrow. Bank of America reported this morning. They beat estimates. Goldman Sachs, American Express, Morgan Stanley, they're all on deck. Tech heavyweights IBM and Microsoft are also on top, as well as widely traded stocks Netflix, Starbucks, Chipotle, Yahoo. And then you have your global conglomerates GE and Honeywell closing out the rest of the week.
The tech-heavy NASDAQ seems to be bouncing back a little bit, and there was a big semiconductor deal, too.
Oh, yeah. There was a huge M&A news this morning. This is what we call in the business as Merger Monday. You typically see most deals announced on Mondays, but this was a massive deal where Japan's SoftBank Group is agreeing to buy Arm Holdings for $32 billion in cash. Now, that's a 43% premium from where Arm had closed on Friday. And it's a bold move for SoftBank, as it's getting more into interconnected machines that will transform the Japanese group and give it more of a major presence in the semiconductor industry now that the Internet of Things is really the hot spot in the industry. SoftBank's portfolio is pretty incredible, though. They also have major holdings in Sprint and Alibaba.
Well, a billion here, a billion there, and after a while, you're beginning to talk about real money.
Yeah.
We always get a billion great ideas out of New York, thanks to Jill Malandrino.
Thank you.
Well, the Republican National Committee has included in their draft platform for this convention this week an amendment declaring pornography a public health crisis. International Edition's Lori London talks about it with Haley Halverson. She's the communications director with the National Center for Sexual Exploitation, which is applauding the decision.
It's really a combination of the type of harm that's caused by pornography and the pervasiveness of pornography. A 2014 study found that pornography use is linked to decreased brain matter in areas of the brain associated with motivation and decision-making. Research demonstrates that pornography use is linked to increased verbal and physical aggression against women, also to increased acceptance of rape myths, higher incidence of STDs. So we see that pornography has a number of harms that harm not only health in the body and mind, but then also society. And then we also see that it's almost impossible for any individual or family to protect themselves from it. 27% of older millennials were first exposed to pornography before they even hit puberty. And so this is something that needs to be addressed on a national stage in order to really combat the destructive nature of pornography.
And how does it relate to sex trafficking?
It is definitely tied to sex trafficking. First of all, it's a form of sexual exploitation itself. And also, a number of individuals who are in the pornography industry could be defined as trafficking. They have facing some form of coercion. And also, it increases the demand for sex trafficking. We see that a study out of Cambridge found that people who are watching pornography have an escalating need for something new, something novel. This leads not all users, but some users to then act out seeking to actually purchase sex from a prostituted or trafficked person. So we definitely see that they are linked.
Have you seen any backlash from the pornography industry because of the successes that you've had?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they definitely aren't happy about it. We see that a certain pornography website, after this amendment passed in the Republican National Committee, gave free memberships to all of the RNC members through the convention, trying to convince them that maybe if they look at porn, maybe they'll decide that it's not harmful. We actually believe the opposite. If you look at what there is, it's incredibly offensive, first of all, to women and often to minorities. And also, it obviously is focused on trends of violence that are harmful for children and adults alike to be consuming. So there has definitely been some backlash from the pornography industry, as can be expected. But we believe that the research and the facts will win out.
Haley Halverson, Communications Director with the National Center for Sexual Exploitation. You can follow this and all of the other issues and developments from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland all this week on International Edition and also online at voanews.com, on Twitter at @VOA_IE, and on our Facebook page at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello. I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. After a six-year hiatus, VH1 held its hip-hop honors this week with a special focus on the female pioneers of the genre. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee about the honors, which came just days after the fatal shootings of two African-American men by police and also the murders of five Dallas, Texas police officers by a black gunman.
Salt and Peppa and Spinderella, who are legendary pioneers as far as hip-hop artists, and especially female hip-hop artists, are concerned. Missy Elliott, again, another pioneer, completely changed the sound and also the imagery of hip-hop music, was honored, as well as Queen Latifah. And I think for many people, younger people, they may not have realized that she's actually a hip-hop pioneer, because now she's an actress and a television host. And then also Lil' Kim, yet another trendsetter, trailblazer, in a slightly different way, was also honored.
This was called VH1 Hip-Hop Honors All Hail the Queens, which focused on the ladies, as you mentioned. Up until then, it was kind of the honors were all about the guys, you know?
Yeah, as is usually the case with hip-hop. You know, a woman would perform here or there, maybe give an honor here or there, or maybe, like in the case of, like, Russell Simmons, be included in the larger piece of work. But this was the first time where the focus was strictly on the women. And Queen Latifah talked a lot about women being in hip-hop, not only as artists, but women are consumers of hip-hop as well, and that we need to speak up, and that All lovers of hip-hop need to seek out the women who are performing and recording, maybe not in the mainstream, but certainly in the underground. But what was missing was really a discussion about how difficult it is to break into the hip-hop game as a woman, and how the expectations for a female MC are so much higher because the assumption is there can only be one. And what tends to happen when that is the case is you tend to have female MCs battling each other as opposed to working together. And we've seen that time and time and time again. So I think that was what was also very beautiful about this celebration, is that all of those women talked about how they influenced each other and that they are supporting each other even now as they've moved on to other areas in their career.
It also came in a context of national discussion about race. And Queen Latifah made a point of mentioning that there is still what she called, I think, institutional racism present in the culture. She made a point of that after she was honored.
Well, you know, exactly. And she said that as long as, and I'm paraphrasing here, as long as she goes outside to hail a cab and is passed by for a white woman, not to say that the white woman doesn't deserve the cab, that racism is alive and well, and that we have to use all of the energy, including the anger, and do something constructive and creative with it. I think she would have been remiss, and everyone else would have been remiss if they had not mentioned it. And the co-founders, actually, of Black Lives Matter, Darnell Moore and Alicia Garza, opened the show. So they set the stage. We all knew throughout the night that the discussion of race would be ongoing throughout the program.
So what do you think? Did you watch the VH1 Hip Hop Honors? Do you have a favorite female hip hop artist? Let us know. You can send Shauna a tweet at a couple of places. She is at VOA Lady DJ or at VOA underscore music. You can also follow her show, The Soul Lounge, on our website, voanews.com.
You've been listening to International Edition, where all this week we'll be covering the Republican National Convention, and you'll find details online as well about Turkey, violence in Baton Rouge, Dallas, and Nice, France, at voanews.com, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you so much for joining us today. Come back again when you can.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States Trade Representative's Office announced on July 7th the annual product review under the Generalized System of Preferences program. This measure adds new duty-free status for travel goods, such as luggage, backpacks, handbags, and wallets, for least developed beneficiary developing countries, including Nepal. The new rule makes these products eligible for duty-free status beginning July 1st. U.S. imports of travel and luggage goods products totaled almost $10 billion in 2015. In 2015, Nepal ranked second after Cambodia of all least developed countries' exporters of luggage products to the United States. Nepal's exports of these products have grown 7% since 2014, totaling $1.8 million in 2015. U.S. trade preference programs provide opportunities for many of the world's poorest countries to use trade to grow their economies and climb out of poverty. At 40 years old, the Generalized System of Preferences Program, or GSP, is the largest and oldest U.S. trade preference program. Under GSP, the United States provides duty-free treatment for many imports from beneficiary developing countries and additional products for least developed beneficiary developing countries. About 5,000 products from 122 beneficiary developing countries and territories, including 43 least developed countries, are eligible for duty-free treatment when exported to the United States under the GSP program. Nearly 1,500 of these products are reserved for duty-free treatment from least developed beneficiary developing countries only. This is a tremendous opportunity for Nepali businesses to expand their exports to U.S. markets, said U.S. Ambassador Elena Teplitz. A strong commitment to open market policies, a stable and transparent legal environment that secures property rights, policies that foster dynamic entrepreneurial activity, and strategic infrastructure investments will help Nepal make the most of this opportunity.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.